Have you ever watched an apocalyptic sci-fi movie and wondered, could any of this really happen? I'm Carrie Bechet, and on Hypothetical, we explore what-if questions two ways, through speculative science fiction and through insight from the world's most brilliant scientists. And spoiler alert, your favorite sci-fi movies aren't nearly as far-fetched as you may think. Time travel with me into our possible futures on Hypothetical. New episodes every Tuesday, available on all podcast apps. That's Hypothetical, Hyperthetical.
Hello, you're listening to Muses and Stuff. It's the podcast that's all about the dolls. They were the groupies, the wives, the girlfriends, and the muses who played such a huge role in rock and roll history by simply being themselves.
They were sweet, sexy, brave, and powerful. They went after what and who they wanted, and they made no apologies.
I'm Shanti.
And I'm Lynx.
Welcome to the show. Oh, that was so awesome. That was the first time that we did it together.
I think we killed it.
I think we did too. So welcome everybody. Today on the show, we are going to be talking about Roxana Shirazi. I'm really looking forward to this. I read her book, and it's called The Last Living Slut by Roxana Shirazi. Born in Iran, bred backstage. And it is steamy. It's, I can't wait to get into it and tell you about it. Before we get to that, we'll just do a few order of business. We just want to let you know that we have some really great guests coming up in the future. So sometimes it's Lynx and I talking, and sometimes I'll have another guest on. And then what we're going to get into shortly is Lynx, myself, and then a guest.
I'm so excited for this.
Right.
It's going to be fun.
Lynx is going to be bringing a woman named Pleasant onto our show.
Yes, she is amazing. Her name's Pleasant Gaiman. Some of you might be familiar with her already. She was in Pamela DeBar's Let's Spend the Night Together. She has a little chapter in there. She also has her own books. Highly suggest you go out and get them. She has a website, so check her out. She has incredible stories. She was part of the LA punk rock scene, sort of. She was not only a proud groupie, but a musician herself. And she's also a belly dancer and a writer. And she's a fabulous woman. And I'm excited to hear in her words.
Oh, yeah. She's a mystic. She's mystical. And without giving too much away, mm-hmm. I cannot wait to just get my hands on that juicy groupie brain of hers.
It's going to be exciting.
This episode is sponsored by I'm with the band Headbands, or I'm with the Headbands. That's not officially sponsored by them, but I have to say it is such a cool company. They're based out of LA. Mm. They are friends with Miss P.
They got a great name.
They've got a great name, and they've got a great product. So it's a couple of girls that are working that have this vision, and they make these incredible headbands. And so they call them headbands and turbans, and some of them are velvety. I got this beautiful velvety purple one. And every time I wear it, and I've just gotten it, and I've been wearing it, people are like, where'd you get that from? So not only is it great for just hanging around and like inside, it's been keeping my ears warm in the Toronto cold and the Toronto winter. And it's good for working out, whatever. And then it also comes in this beautiful packaging. Like, even right down to the packaging is fantastic. And their business cards are beautiful. So please go check them out. They're on Instagram. I'm with the Headbands. And not only that, I'm really excited to expand our group, because they must be a part of Miss P's LA Dolls.
Must be, yeah.
And so I'm really looking forward to like a Miss P universal group.
Yeah, absolutely. There's many of us all over the world.
That's right. So shout out to you, beautiful, wonderful, friendly ladies. You're exactly what I want to see. And that's just strong women supporting one another and absolutely. Strong people. And just, but you know, like, we have this connection, and it's so nice to just build one another up. I want to welcome some new listeners. If you're just tuning in now, I want to say thank you. Welcome. We're so happy that you're here.
Absolutely.
I want to give a shout out to a guy named Tim from Pennsylvania, I think it is.
Oh, awesome.
I know. I've never spoken to anybody in Pennsylvania before. And he came to our podcast from when I was a guest on Michael Butler's Rock and Roll Geek Show.
Cool.
So I just want to say thank you, Michael, for all of the new listeners. And I'm just looking forward to sharing more. And so one really nice thing Tim said was that he really appreciated me sharing my story and the story of these women, all of these beautiful groupies. And one thing that I really liked that he said was, keep the music loud and keep spreading the love.
Ah, that's like, that sort of sums up this podcast, like, perfectly.
Yeah. So thanks, Tim.
He gets it.
And then we had a listener request for Drew to come back on. We had done the Halloween episode with Elvira. Mm-hmm. And the person who told me that they would like him to come back on as a guest said that they listened to the episode twice because they liked it so much.
Drew's got to come back.
So that was a first. Yeah, that was a first of somebody telling me that they listened to an episode twice.
Awesome.
So in terms of what this podcast is about, I think that the intro did a pretty good job of explaining, but essentially we are taking this word, this term, this lifestyle, this label, this way of being of groupie, and we're just having fun with it. We are just showing everybody that it's not a dirty word, that it's actually something to be celebrated.
Yeah, trying to bring it back to its roots, where it was a positive, almost spiritual thing. It's about music and love and sharing with one another and just all the goodness.
Absolutely. And then when I was kind of sitting down and thinking about where we started with the podcast, we very much started in the 60s and 70s. Mm-hmm. And when I would say we, you know, I said to Lings before I started this, I said, when I started this podcast, I wanted it to be two of us. I wanted there to be two of us. And there was somebody there that was helping me at the beginning, but then they decided that they didn't want to be a voice on the podcast. Mm-hmm. And it ended up, you know, really solidifying our friendship. And this person was essential in the creation of it, but in a different way. And then you came along and it became what I had originally intended it to be and more.
It just feels like this was meant to be. I'm so happy that I am your partner on this.
Yeah, that's right. So we started with the 60s and 70s. So that's like our Patti Boyds, our Pamela DeBar, our GTOs.
Yeah, Marianne.
Yeah, right from the beginning. And then we've got our 70s and 80s. And I was a little bit hesitant about the 80s and 90s and a little bit worried about those. So I eased into it. And it wasn't until episode 18 that we really started to come around to this.
Get into those waters, yes.
But we've got 70s and 80s groupies who are like Serinda Fox, who is going to be featured on an upcoming episode soon, Nancy Spungen. And then we have the 80s and 90s groupies. So we covered Bobby Brown, but then it kind of seems like at the moment we'll have to do more research, but you know, the Pamela Andersons,
oh yeah,
the Carmen Electras, they were very late 80s, early and mid 90s.
There's lots of actresses that are also groupies that you don't think of from back then. I mean, Gwyneth Paltrow, Winona Ryder, like these women, they dated a lot of musicians.
And this is true.
Yeah.
And then today we're going to be getting into a 90s and 2000s groupie, which is Roxana Shirazi. And I'm sure a lot of them are going to keep popping up. And we keep finding more. And we already had the ones that we wanted to come on and talk about immediately. And then, of course, we've got our Yoko Onos and our Imans.
There's just an unending lightning pot full of women that we have plenty more to go, so keep listening.
Yeah. And then when I was thinking about, you know, when I started, 2008, I know you started a bit earlier than I did.
A little earlier, yeah.
So for me, it was like 2008 up until 2017, 2020. So, you know, like 2010 to 2020s, whatever, what do we call that? So it's not the 60s and 70s. What do we call us? It's the
I don't want to say millennial because...
No, because it's that... Because the 60s and... The 60s is, you know, that decade. Then we've got the 70s and the 80s. So what are we? We're the...
2000s?
I don't know. Can somebody tell
we're
us...
We're kind of in the center.
How... But essentially, after the 90s and 2000s with Roxana Shirazi, mm-hmm. I realized that, you know, the 2000s, the 2010s, the 2020s... Not that I'm saying we're 2000s to 2020. Oh, my God. No, it's like... the for me, 2010, 2020. Because 2017, yeah. 2020, I'm going to retire. Groupie, retired.
Sure you are.
Yeah, for the, yeah, exactly. And for those who are just tuning in, that's a bit of a running joke in this podcast is groupies in retirement. Yeah. So listen back for that. But essentially, that's us.
Absolutely. And other women out there whose stories we haven't heard yet because we're still in the middle of our experiences. We haven't yet written our books yet.
That's right.
But we're out there.
But we can tell you from firsthand experience that we have got a group of girls, a group of dolls with their own stories. We have our own. But again, we have definitely dedicated this podcast to telling the story of the stories of the women who already have their stories out mm-hmm. there. And we do share a little bit of ourselves here and there. And if you're really listening intently, you might be able to put some things together. But ultimately...
this is about the muses who inspire us.
That's right. Okay, so we've got Roxana Shirazi. Now, I thought a nice way to begin her introduction would be to read the about the author, because with a title like "The Last Living Slut, Born in Iran, Bred Backstage," people might start a little bit of hmm in their heads. So I'm going to say this. This is what her about the author says. Roxana Shirazi was born in Tehran, Iran, and was sent to England at age 10. She holds a master's in English from Bath Spa University and speaks at international women's conferences on the subject of gender and identity. She currently lives, loves, and writes in London.
Awesome.
Yeah. And so a lot of these women, the ones that have written the books and a lot, like, educated, smart.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Badass women. And so because she has the word slut on her, in her title, she, at the beginning, has a few words on the term slut. And I will read you what she says right at the beginning. "Sex, even though it's just a small segment of our existence, is still such a beautiful, sensual experience, and exploring one's sexuality and sexual diversity should be respected and celebrated. In this book, I am the last living slut embodying the negative meaning of the word, and the first living slut embodying a new, positive, and celebrated meaning of the word. Some will say that the word slut can never be independent from social and historical meanings attached to it, and will always be bound and steeped in the negative sense of the word, and thus there should be a new word to describe a sexually active and experimental individual to detach it completely from its previous meaning. Well, maybe, but in this book at least, I have been conceited enough to give myself the authority to change the meaning of a word. Love your body, love your sexuality, and realize that you are a bad human being only if you are unkind and cruel and do harm unto others and not because of your sex life."
That's amazing. That's so powerful. And she's doing exactly what the word slut, which we are doing with the word groupie.
Exactly. So a lot of similarities. Mm-hmm. Although, ironically, she puts down the groupies. Word groupie
so
a few
many
times.
Of them do. So many of them do.
So I wanted to show you this picture. I haven't showed it to you yet. Okay. I wanted to show it to you. It's a picture that she has. She's got a lot of really I'm not even going to say a word because I want to see what you come up with. I'm going to show you a picture of her and just like let me know. Maybe describe it. We could describe it for our listeners. All and right. Then let me know maybe what you think about it.
Oh, that's sexy. All right. Well, she's got a lovely naked body and a lovely tatted up man enjoying that body.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. So she's just got her thigh high stockings on her.
And let me just say, she's the one taking control here. She's got the power in this photo.
Nice. Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, you can't see his face, but you can see hers.
Yeah.
And
she's looking at you dead in the eye. Saying like challenge this.
That's it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. I almost forgot to read you this part of the beginning.
Please.
And so, who is this? Neil Strauss and Anthony Bauza from Igniter Books said this about it. The Last Living Slut is a beautiful memoir of growing up in the political turbulence of Tehran, an unflinching portrait of teenage cultural dislocation in London, a backstage romp that makes Pamela DeBar's I'm with the Band read like a nun's diary in comparison.
Is it true?
Yes,
I guess she's more detailed, maybe.
There's points where it just reads like erotic literature.
Oh really?
Yeah, it really does. And it gets I don't know if dramatic is the word, but almost, oh my goodness, I don't even know how to say it, but it's
like a whirlwind.
It's a whirlwind. It's really not like anything that I've read before, but it was outrageous.
Outrageous.
It's outrageous.
I gotta read this.
Yeah. So, I'm gonna tell you. Yeah, I'm gonna tell you about her. But because I'm saying that it is outrageous, it might be a good time to just go with the chapter titles. So she's got some pretty incredible chapter titles, and you're going to understand what I mean when I say outrageous when I read them for you. However, I decided that I'm not going to read them for you. Because Roxana moved to England at the age of 10, she's got an English accent. Well, I assume. I actually haven't heard her speak
yet. She probably has at least some bit of English in there.
Roxana, please come on the podcast and let us
hear your accent.
Yeah. So I asked my friend Simeon, who lives in England. She's in Camden Town. She was on the first episode ever of the podcast.
Yeah.
And she is a musician. I'll link up her stuff. Trust me, you want to know who she is. So I asked her to read the chapter titles in her cutie cute sweetie accent, and she did. So I'm gonna play that for you now. Awesome. And I think I left out one chapter title because I was like, I'm not making her say that.
All right, let's hear him.
Chapter 2. I was a child basked in gunfire, Islamic law, and sexuality. Chapter 4. I found shelter in her lap and heaven in her protection. Chapter 6. I soon realised that it was opium that was the love of my father's life, and that gradually he'd become bored of me. Chapter 10. The rush of hot, burning sensation swooshes in my tummy, and I feel like a bad girl. I am a bad girl. Chapter 13. I decided that I would try it with two boys, while in the next room, war songs blared out from the television. Chapter 23. I had never done it with a boy, just a 15-year-old schoolgirl. Chapter 27, Roadies. I lost my head in their laps. Chapter 30, I straddled him right there and then, in the middle of the night, amid the thicket and the flowers. Chapter 35, I remind myself that I was here in a groupie capacity, not to have a fucking romantic time. Chapter 37, Sinister Gates from Avenged Sevenfold unleashed his hot pee all over my breasts in the moonlight.
Wow. Some of those are like beautifully poetic, and then some are like hilarious. She seems to have humor about it.
That is exactly this book. So it's exactly this book. It is so poetic at in places, and then it turns in on itself, becomes something completely different.
Yeah.
And almost the opposite of that. And I think you're right. And I think maybe I didn't pick up on her sense of humor right away, but I think that you picked up on something there, maybe with Simeon having read it. Thanks, mm-hmm. Sim, by the way. Thanks, babe. And I think you're right. And if I were to read it again, I might go in with maybe that little bit of
a lighter.
Yeah, a lighter, because a lot of the times too, like, she gets very serious at points, and mm-hmm. it does get very serious. But so let's just talk about Yeah, our Roxana a little bit. So she was born in, it was either 1978 or 79, in a military hospital in Tehran. Her mother was a political activist, and her father was pretty absent, and as you heard from the chapter titles, addicted to opium.
Drug addict, yes.
Which apparently a lot of men were at mm-hmm. that time. So there was very little social and political freedom, as you can imagine. And she said that during Iran's revolution and subsequent war with Iraq, she remained, and these are her words now, basked in pure love and happiness during the terror of revolutionary gunfire, Islamic law, and her initiation into sexuality. So she came to sexuality very young, which I'll just get into a moment. But along with her very early awakening into sexuality, she said that she led a fairy tale existence. So she would talk about the blazing hot summer nights, sleeping outside under the stars with her mom and her grandma, using, you know, describing the colors, the electric turquoise. And she describes her grandmother as a goddess, which is very similar to what Catherine James had with her goddess, mm-hmm. and having these mothers or grandmothers as these angelic, goddess-like priestess women, and then often having an absentee father or parent.
Yeah.
And then we also, in terms of that absentee kind of father, another example of that is with Pamela DeBar. She loved her daddy OJ, mm-hmm. and always maintained that he was a very good father, but he was absent in the sense of his work took him away. So he would come back to town and then he'd leave, and he'd come back to town and it was like he was a rock star.
Yeah. It's true. Wow, yeah.
So there's that similarity. And then I thought to myself, my goodness, my dad worked in the mines. Mm-hmm. So until I was 5 years old, my dad was gone and he'd come back and he'd leave and he'd come back and he'd come back. And then we'd do all these great things with him. So when he was gone, you know, my mom couldn't even eat when he was gone. She missed him so much. And then he'd come back and then we'd have all of these. Yeah, and mom would be happy and we would be doing all of these fun activities. So it's like, good time, guy. Like, yeah. And then you can start to draw some.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, some parallels there. So yeah, her grandmother opened up her home to everyone. Her mother was had a psych degree and taught literature. So I really enjoyed this book. And the first half, interestingly enough, I think her account of her childhood was probably one of my favorite parts. You would think that it would be, okay, well, what about the bands? What about the musicians? But really, I loved how she described the sensuality of her childhood.
She's got a very unique upbringing. One that matches any other groupie, at least.
No, not that I've come across so far. So her dad was in and out, and sometimes he showed up, sometimes he wouldn't. And when he did, she always wanted to look nice and impress him.
Of course.
So getting back to that early sexuality bit, she masturbated for the first time when she was 5. And she masturbated to men in uniform who were around all of the time. So very early on, she started to associate these feelings with almost being scared, because she was scared of them, but they gave her a rush.
Yeah.
And she describes this beautiful, scary moment when she was in her kitchen and she'd lift up the cellar door and she'd crawl down the stairs alone, and then all of a sudden she's below the house and it's dark and it's scary. And she said that the rush that she felt in those first few moments, it was almost like she would chase that for her life, which then makes sense to
bringing it into the rock and roll scene.
Absolutely. So she had male cousins and, you know, boy neighbors, and she really brought a lot of them into their sexual awakening because she came to it so soon. So she would describe things like sitting on the step, having two boys. She would tell two boys to tie her shoe, and then she would slowly bring, you know, her skirt up to show her thigh. And she felt like a queen with these boys at her feet. And then she realized that, so she was probably about 8 years old at this point, that she had a power over boys.
Yeah.
And she liked it.
Of course.
Now, there are some accounts of her molestation.
Okay.
Which I'll leave to the readers, and I'll leave that to them. However, I have never read any kind of book that have that has approached it in that manner.
Interesting.
And I thought that the way that she approached it was fabulous.
Oh, man. I'm excited to read this.
I can't wait to hear what you
think
about it. So we, Lynx and I have just been trading books now back and forth.
Constantly.
So when she turned 10 years old, her mother sent Roxana and Roxana's grandmother to England to go and live with some family because they needed, the mother wanted to get some of them out at least so that they could join them eventually because of things that were happening.
Yeah.
So she said, so she didn't want to leave. She loved where she was. And she described England as cold, colorless. She didn't speak the language.
Wow, that's rough.
She faced a lot of racism.
Mm-hmm.
And her grandmother got sick and died within 9 months of being in England with her.
That's brutal.
Yeah. She had her first orgasm at the age of 11.
Not surprising.
And that was the chapter title that I did not make Simeon read. So shortly around that, around that time, her mother then moved to England. And then she had a stepfather who ended up being abusive towards her, just physically and and then a younger brother as well.
Okay.
So when she was 16 years old, she entered a talent show and... I gotta read it. It's hilarious. At 16, I entered my first talent competition, which was held at a nearby church. For days before the event, I practiced my dance moves and sang lyrics over an instrumental backing track. On the evening of the competition, I wore a white, lacy, see-through top with a leather miniskirt and fishnet tights. Then I covered my head and body in a traditional Islamic hijab, so the audience would assume I was going to perform a sweet Iranian folk song. Iranian folk song? Just before going on stage, I removed the hijab to reveal my slutty outfit and did my number. The audience sat frozen, unsure how to react. When the song and dance routine ended, the stunned vicar managed to choke out, "Thank you for that." I left the stage happy that I'd managed to sing and dance so well without losing my breath.
Amazing.
Yeah. So
taking her power onto the stage.
And you nailed it. So you intuitively picked up on she turns 17 and she starts dancing exotically. So she was dancing in Soho and she loved it because it was the opposite of what she was getting at home, which was either she was ignored or she was abused.
Mm-hmm.
So, and then every time she'd get up on stage, before she'd get up on stage, she'd look at pictures of Axl Rose to get her in the mood.
Well, Axl was once beautiful. A long, long time ago.
What year was that his prime beauty?
Oh, God. Like early 90s. 91, maybe? 89, 90?
Another thing about, like, she would have certain musicians that would, like, send her into a frenzy. There's parts in the books where she would mention, and then Jim Morrison or The Doors came on. And then all of a sudden, it was just, like, for her, that was, like, panty dropper.
Yeah.
So it didn't matter where she was. If she was in somebody's dressing room and The Doors comes on, she's up, top is off, and she's making out with her friend.
Amazing.
Like, every time.
Well, Jim will do that.
Yeah. Oh, yes, he will. And so she, at this point, she still hadn't had consensual sex with a man or with a boy her own age, she was only having sex with girls around her own age, which, again, if you can remember Simeon's readings.
I remember.
So she was very open about her bisexuality, and it was around this time that she started to go see live bands, and she started to go see music. So she was taken to a concert, and
this was like mid-90s?
Okay, so she was born in 79, and then so she must have been...
Late 90s? Uh-huh.
Okay. Yeah. So she went and saw a band, and wouldn't you know it, she ended up having sex with a musician.
Wow.
Yeah. So she had a best friend named Lori, and they had sex as well, and that was like her partner in crime for shows.
Awesome. You gotta have a partner in crime.
Totally. Yeah.
Or many.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I've, over the years, the partners in crime have changed.
Me too.
There's been times where I've gone out to a show and then by myself, and then at the end of the night.
You leave with one?
Well, at the end of the night, I remember one time specifically, the entire band from Texas, mm-hmm. I'd given them a place to crash up in the dojo mm-hmm. that I was like renting beside. So, you know, I would go up by myself too. And
I used to do the same. I never knew anyone in the music scene until I started going out on my own and putting myself out there and meeting people.
Yeah. When just going back to the Rock and Roll Geek Show, one of the questions was, so do you and your girlfriends like go specifically to like meet bands? And I think I said yes, but more so it's like not really.
No,
it's
we
like,
go to like
what happens happens.
Yeah, and it's more organic than that.
Absolutely.
I mean, sometimes there's a band that of course you want to meet and you hope it'll happen, but it's not like that's the only goal of the night. The goal of the night is always just to have fun, and if that happens, like, awesome.
Absolutely. So it's nice to have that buddy, and it's always nice to go with one person. And I always think it's like the more the merrier too.
Absolutely.
Like the more girls you've got, then the better. So I went first when then she started going to shows. She said at first it was like a lot of Motley Crue wannabes. So she explains really the progression of the types or caliber or level or fame, mm-hmm. and then how she ultimately ended up with somebody in Guns N' Roses and hanging out with Tommy Lee. So going from the Motley Crue wannabes to Motley Crue.
Yeah, sorry.
Right? So it's pretty interesting how that happened. She does have a lot of negative things to say about girls at that time who either were trying to flatter her so that they could get closer to the bands by getting through her, because a lot of times barriers to bands can be either other women or other groupies or managers and like mm-hmm. female managers. So she explores a bit of that dark side of music, of groupiedom.
Mm-hmm.
Of those kinds of things. So her and her friend Lori, they had no qualms about sucking dick to get backstage. And I say that with, you know, like respect to her.
Yeah, if that's what you want to do.
Because I might have gone in and been reading her book with the judgmental attitude that somebody might have been having towards Pamela DeBar. So I had to make sure to check myself and go, mm-hmm. whatever
it is. It's their decision. It's not yours.
Exactly. And if anything, for a little while, I think it gave her and her friend a thrill because, mm-hmm. you know, if
you're doing something naughty.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And she liked being naughty.
Yeah.
She liked being a bad girl. And so when the security guard said, well, yeah, I'll give you backstage passes, but you have to get down on your knees. She said, no, Lori and I are going to get down on our knees.
This is also interesting because I think it also, a lot of this kind of stuff that people hear about, it depends on the type of bands. Because I've never experienced ever where a roadie has propositioned me like that or been like a gatekeeper or,
mm-hmm.
And I've never seen it happen to other women either. But nope. You hear a lot about it with sort of like the hair metal bands. That seems to be like their type of thing. And maybe I'm wrong. I'm not saying it's solely theirs, but
I'm going to agree with you. And I think that's maybe, and I don't want to blame the 80s and the 90s. Like, I'm not here to blame. We're just here to explore.
Yeah.
And to try to figure some things out.
It seems to have like started in
that. But that's why I was hesitant to start there or go there quickly, because I didn't have a lot to say that was positive. And I want to keep, and we want to keep this positive.
Yeah.
And we want to keep it anti-slut shaming. And we want all that good stuff.
Absolutely.
But you know what? The mark of a good groupie is somebody who is friends with the roadies, who calls the doormen by name. Do you know what I mean? Like,
absolutely.
I'm going to be seeing and hanging out with my roadie friend who's traveling around, who will be in Toronto in a few weeks.
And that's also a good example of like, a groupie is not there just to sleep with a rock star. Like, you are part of the whole, it's like a family back there. And especially if you are like touring with a band or whatever, you like it isn't about the lead singer, or, you know, it's the whole atmosphere. Like,
totally.
You're friends with everyone.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. And so, and speaking of, yeah, going on tour, you know, she has a lot of really kinky and, you know, tour bus stories. So she's got some pretty funny ones of, you know, those little beds on the tour bus and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then she gets into the negative side with the drugs and the alcohol. So she'll say, you know, there was a time where she got a phone call being like, you need to come take care of your friend because she's going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And then so she opened up the hotel room and there's Lori in nothing but cowboy boots walking down the hallway of the hotel, totally spaced out with God knows what in her hair.
Oh, God.
Okay, so she gets into that stuff as well.
Yeah.
And
that's why it's good to have a friend. Have a partner looking after you.
Oh, totally. And so she talks about the guys. She has pictures of her and the bands, the guys that she went on tour with. And to
Like a whole photo shoot with that when you showed me.
Yeah, exactly. So I wrote out a list of some of the names of these guys that she mentions.
Cool.
Because, again, I think outrageous is going to be the word. And then some of the names of the bands. So here are the names. Duff.
Oh, yeah.
Jizzy Pearl. The Rev.
Oh.
Dirk.
Are these, well, I know Duff, but are the rest of them names that like she gave them?
No. Snell.
Oh.
Stoxy. Mad Pete.
Oh. We all know a Mad Pete.
Zach with two K's. Okay. Actually, I think Mad Pete was the one. He wasn't in a band. He just followed them
just
around
crazy.
Everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah, we all know a Mad Pete.
And Sinister Gates. Okay, and then some of the bands were named Towers of London, Kid Ego, Brides of Destruction, and Avenged Sevenfold.
I know Avenged Sevenfold. That's the only one I can...
From the earlier comment about Hot Piss? Whatever it was. Do you know them from then?
No,
from
like I remember them around. That just triggered my memory, like, oh, yeah, I've heard about them.
Oh, yeah.
That must have been an interesting chapter.
You'll find out for yourself when you read this book. So one major thing that she kept coming back to in this book was that the major rule of groupiedom was to never fall in love, because that's where everything falls apart.
It's an interesting truth, I would say. I mean, almost all the women that we've discussed so far, the ones that have gotten married are divorced and didn't always end, you know, in a positive way for them.
You know what, I hadn't read Bobby Brown's book or listened. I'd listened to it, but I hadn't listened to it before Andrea was on. So Andrea told me about it. And in a way, I wish I would have, because I really wanted, I was so bummed out that the cherry pie guy, the guy from Warrant.
Yeah.
He pursued her so much. Mm-hmm. And it was so romantic. I'm the cherry pie guy. You're my cherry pie girl. I'm going to marry her. Yeah. He was after her. He pursued her. And then once they were together, he turned into a jealous, abusive asshole. And the fairy tale was over.
Mm-hmm. And that's the same for so many people. We're going to be doing Sarinda soon, and you'll hear about her story as well. And yeah.
And you know what? The one in my now almost 10 years of officially being an active groupie, I mean, I love a lot of people, and I have a lot of loves. Mm-hmm. But I was really in love with somebody. And he broke my heart. And out of all of the musicians and out of all of those guys that have come in and out, some of them, I'm not with them. Most of them, I'm not with them in a romantic capacity anymore.
Yeah.
But there's still so much respect. Absolutely. And we still, like, we're friends.
Absolutely.
We catch up. And the one where there was the big complicated love, we don't speak.
No, I have a similar story. Absolutely. And that's the thing too. I think a lot of people think either groupies are in it either just for like a one night stand, or you just want to marry like a rich rock star. And marriage has like never been a goal of mine with a rock star. Like, again, reading these books, that does not sound like a happy household life that I would want to live. I enjoy having fun and, you know, going out and dancing and music and just having a good time. And the wife of a rock star no longer lives that life.
Right. And I was going to say, because you're going to say the wife of a rock star. And I'm like, unless you're Gail Zappa.
That's true.
Who I'm going to be talking about next week.
Yeah.
There are always
diamonds in the rough. Good men out there who are who they are.
And I'm actually going to be talking to one. I'm talking to a husband next week who is a musician who's been one for a long time, who I've known for almost 10 years. And I'm telling him the story of Gail. So it's going to be perfect.
Perfect.
So I'm going to read you two more things.
Awesome.
And then that's it for our girl Roxanna. So this is what she says about love and rock and roll. I had once thought of the world of rock and roll as a wondrous place full of free love and free spirits. But it wasn't. It wasn't the sex that had led me to this place. It was the love. And in rock and roll, love is a dirty, dirty world. Word. Sorry. Perhaps the backstage world was actually too conservative and limiting for my wild spirit. Rock and roll had sold itself as a utopian playground. But as a groupie, I wasn't allowed to be as wild as I wanted to be. What was required of me was just a mere fraction of who I was. I wanted free love, creativity, an abundance of sex and poetry, broken taboos. I wanted to be taken places that I'd never gone before. I wanted that thrill I'd felt climbing down into my grandmother's cellar all those years ago.
Wow. It's powerful.
Yeah, it is. And then I'll just finish with this one thing that she says. Mm-hmm. And then we'll rock and roll on Eddie here. La la la. Okay. I have walked past one cliche after another. Fists through windows, trashed rooms, girls patiently lined up outside a lead singer's door, random people being hit and cut, tour managers losing it because of lack of sleep, roadies going out in the middle of the night to find snacks or KY jelly, false promises, moans and groans, and lost property, including girls' dignity. But I've always managed to come out of it with inner thighs aching and soul flying.
Fabulous. Fabulous.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah.
I gotta read this.
Yeah. So, Roxanna, if you're listening,
I think you are.
We do love you. Thank you for telling your story.
Absolutely.
And we hope that we couldn't have done you justice. Only you can. So we recommend that everybody picks up The Last Living Slut, Born in Iran, Bred Backstage by Roxanna Shirazi.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
All right. That's it for this week, everybody. You can find me, Shanti, on Instagram. But you know what? you can also find links there too, because there's pictures of links and there's pictures
you can find of us girls.
You can find us on Instagram at Muses and Stuff Podcast, as well as on Facebook, just Muses and Stuff Podcast. Again, please take the time to rate, review, subscribe on iTunes, and then that way we can help our other groupie brothers and sisters hear these stories as well.
Yeah, thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.